This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call. 1-800-462-7413. And, of course, along with our calls, we have some interesting topics to talk over.
Yes, personality and brain structure is the part of your brain, some part of your brain, actually important in determining whether you're an introvert or an extrovert, you're an optimist or a pessimist. Interesting research, once again, going to what is learned and what is inherited and what develops in the body. I think it's really exciting.
And?
Diabetes, the risk of Avandia. Avandia is a drug that carries perhaps some significant risk. People, diabetics, take it to get their blood sugar under control because they feel it will improve their life and keep them alive. But is that true? And should the drug be taken off the market?
Yeah, interesting to talk about. It's been in the news. What's our recipe?
Savory cinnamon chilled shrimp. I love shrimp. I mean, shrimp is my favorite seafood. I can just see the smile on your face. You know, tofu, the smile goes down, the frown comes up. Shrimp, you are always bright and excited.
Now, this is a recipe from the vault. So those of you who were listening in 1997 will remember this recipe.
That's right. If you jump on the way back machine with Sherman and Mr. Peabody, you will go back to 1997, and we're going to travel back there today.
Those are references that go back before 1997.
To black and white. Black and white.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. Let's get to the phones. Here's a listener now, Zorba, in Branson, Missouri. Hi.
Hi there.
How can we help?
Well, I've got a question for you. I'm 45 years old. And I have been very active during my life. I don't have any medical illnesses. For the last 14 years, I've done taekwondo and ran and have done weightlifting. And in the last year, I've transitioned to doing more ballet and yoga, and I'm very interested in increasing my flexibility. So I did some research in online and found some thoughts on raw diets and supplements such as MSM and vitamin C, and was wondering what you thought about the validity of things like that to increase flexibility, or if you knew of any kind of supplements to increase flexibility.
Well, Zorba will certainly answer, but my question is, how flexible do you want to be? You're doing all of that other stuff.
Well, the things that I have done in the past were more outside the taekwondo, the running and the weightlifting seem a little more counter to flexibility. So I'm flexible for my age, and I'm flexible where I can do splits. I'm about 4 inches from the floor, but I want to be very flexible to do ballet.
4 inches from the floor doing the splits? I would call that really flexible, no matter what you're...
I don't call that flexible, but for 45, it's flexible.
I mean, come on. Now, you know, you're in the upper 1% of the population of women. Guys generally can't, you know, have great difficulty doing the splits in the first place because for whatever reason, women seem to be more flexible, and kids, of course, are always more flexible. Interesting stuff when we look at our body as it ages, and despite Botox, we're all aging, and the Botox people would like to think that that we don't age, but despite that, we do. And there are three things that occur. There's cardiovascular, you know, aerobic exercise. There's strength, there's muscle, and there's flexibility. And if we look at them, cardiovascular, of course, is the stuff that we zero in on. Why? Because it's the leading cause of death. When we look at strength, we lose 1% of the muscle mass that we have every single year. So when you look at young, you know, we'll say skinny boys that look like they can hardly lift things, they have a lot of muscle mass. It's all muscle. And then you look at the same person 40 years later, and they may have the same body, but they have more fat and they have less muscle. And flexibility also seems to go, of course, as we get older. But to my knowledge, the key to flexibility is kind of what you're doing. You know, it's really a mechanical
These
issue.
These supplements, then, don't do any good?
I don't think the supplements do anything. I mean, supplements, I think, have a value. One of the values of supplements are that it's sort of like new science that comes out. I mean, science observes things and then says, is this real? And then tests it and then makes a decision. That's kind of how we, you know, became better medically. And what happens is people who take supplements are more flexible. But they're more flexible on the whole, not because they take the supplements, but because they have a different lifestyle. In other words, people who pay attention to their body pay attention to their body in a whole bunch of different areas, and that's really where it comes from. But, you know, we spend billions and billions on supplements, and, you know, you walk into GNC and other places, and they try to sell you health in a bottle. And frankly, you're doing a lot. Right. Keep doing what you're doing.
Well, my ultimate question is, when you are older, is it possible to increase flexibility, or pretty much what you had when you were younger is it?
Well, you mean you probably will not be more flexible than when you were when you're younger. You're probably. Now, when I say probably, let me explain why. The issue has to do with the fact that there's some people in their 50s who are actually much more fit than they were in their 30s. Because when they were 30s, they were lazy and slothful. Mm-hmm. But if you were an elite athlete in your 30s, you can't. And you're an elite athlete in your 50s. You'll never be as good in your 50s as you were in your 30s. But you can improve for what you were because you may have been lazy and slothful. So if you were really flexible and you were working on flexible in your 20s, the most you can do is really go back to that point
of where you were
in your 20s. Yeah, because your body, what happens is the ligaments, the tendons, they change, and we develop arthritis. I mean, that's what we develop. It may be a minor arthritis, but you know, our joints just change as we get older. But have you always been a lifetime exerciser?
Yes. I was 18.
Since you were 18. Keep up the good work. You are a paradigm for our culture and our public radio listeners who have to exercise more.
Thank you very much.
Sure, we appreciate the call. Thank you. 800-462-7413.
You know, this includes the lazy and slothful slugs that sometimes actually do the production and engineering on public radio shows.
No, that's a cheap shot. and if you want Zorba to call you lazy and slothful, call 1-800-462-7413. A listener now, Zorba, in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help you?
I have been diagnosed with a calcineal spur with a tear in the medial plantar fascia of my right foot.
Okay.
And the doctor recommended that I have it treated with something called orthotripsy.
Okay.
But my insurance company didn't want to pay for that. So in an effort to alleviate the pain, I went out and bought a pair of tennis shoes that are called shape-ups.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because the sole is shaped in such a way that the contact point from when I plant my foot down while stepping is about an inch and a half or so in front of the tear in my heel.
So how'd that work?
It's worked out fairly well. My question for the doctor is, do tears ever heal themselves, or is this the kind of thing that will eventually require some kind of treatment such as either surgery or this orthotripsy?
Well, let me tell you, jump in and explain something interesting.
Certainly.
Insurance companies often pay for things that have been proven to be useful and healthful. Insurance companies don't pay for things that are unproven. Now, some unproven things then become proven later on. In other words, there's research. But when there are experimental procedures, such as this orthotripsy, which is probably junk, might work, but it's probably junk. They don't do anything for it. And let me explain why. If I go out on the streets in New York City, Chicago, Madison, Wisconsin, and I take people who have no heel pain at all, and I look at their ankles and their feet, and I look at these little spurs, I'll find that 10-20% of the population has the spurs and they have no symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
But you go into a doctor or a podiatrist, and they'll put up and they'll say, hey, this is a spur up here. This is the cause of your problem. I want to go in and do surgery. I want to inject it with steroid. In the end, the answer is conservative treatment works 99% of the time. So the orthotripsy, I'm going to come out squarely on the side of the insurance company, and I'm going to say, don't do it. Now, let's talk about tears and what actually goes on. This is a common problem, heel pain, and it's called plantar fasciitis. And we'll give you a link on our website, zorbapastor.org, so you can go and look at it about plantar fasciitis. And the plantar fasciitis, the fascia, is a bunch of connective tissue on your feet, and it forms the arch. you know, low arches, high arches, it forms the arch, and it connects to the heel. What happens is we often get heel pain when we stretch and pull, and we may tear a few fibers. The answer ultimately is usually in the heel and in the foot. Going out, doing what you did, and getting dynamite shoes, that works for a lot of people. Going and buying simple Dr. Scholl's heel inserts, that works for a lot of people. Going and buying $150 shoes or $150 inserts that can go into various shoes, that works for people. In other words, you've got to try to see what works. There are a whole bunch of other things. Taping your foot. Simply taping your foot in a very specific way. And once again, we'll put that taping on our website. That works for a lot of people. So I tell people, conservative, conservative, conservative. Now, do not walk barefoot and ignore this concept of the fact that you need to have it. And I'm sure this procedure cost several thousand dollars.
I'm sure. You're right.
I'm sure. Good luck. And by the way, naproxen, over-the-counter, Aleve, 2 tablets twice a day when you're bothered. Very useful for this. Good luck. No barefoot for you. You are the shoe man.
Thank you very much.
Sure. We appreciate the call. Thank you. 800-462-7413. So, Zorba, they found a link between personality and brain structure?
Yes, they found a link. And first of all, let's look at research. You know, this is rudimentary research. This is the beginning of research. You know, we're stuck on the fact that there's certain parts of the brain that work, and we'll find that part and we'll fix it. But the brain is more like a web. When you Google something on the internet, it's some machine somewhere, and it doesn't matter where it is. Let's look at the brain structure. Yes. And what they found. They're looking at extroverts and introverts. They're also looking at people with optimistic and pessimistic personality.
You and me.
Yeah, right. No, that is true.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah. I mean, I like going to parties, and you don't. But it wasn't always that way for me. For me, it changed at the age of 19. Mm-hmm. At 19, for whatever reasons, maybe some part of my brain changed, and that's really where this comes from. So they looked at people who were more cheerful, you know, on a scale of cheerfulness, not cheerfulness, more assertive. You know, I'm going to do something or not. Have a tendency to want awards. You know, I want to say, you know, doing a good job.
Like you.
It sounds awful.
Like you.
The more I go into this, the worse it actually sounds. Agreeableness. I'm going to go to the better traits. Going to the better traits. Forget the awards business. That isn't part of the study.
It says right here.
I'm ignoring that part of the study. Agreeableness. I'm more agreeable than you are.
Oh, don't absolutely.
You think? Conscientiousness? You're pretty conscientious.
No, I'm not.
You're not?
I am. Yeah, I am. I take that
back. I think you're conscientious.
I'm pretty conscientious.
Neuroticism. You're more neurotic than I am.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
No
openness.
Doubt.
Openness. I think I'm more. Well, you're pretty
I
open.
I am
with
pretty
it.
Open,
you're pretty open.
Actually,
so.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, so these are 5 traits. It's not one particular trait. And on one trait are people who are generally the glass is half full. And on the other side, the glass is half empty. And lo and behold, there appears to be a difference in a part of the brain. It's the lateral prefrontal cortex that appears to be larger in people who see the glasses half full than the glasses half empty.
So now, you have a larger brain than I have.
Well, no, in this one part. But now here's really the issue, and here's the rub. We have thought for years the brain is really predetermined. It grows up until about the age of 5 or 6, and then you don't have much ability to change it, and that's wrong. There's something called neuroplasticity. In other words, our brain actually changes throughout life. Changes a lot when we're younger. Well, we know that because we're growing. But it appears that we have control over changing parts of the brain, just like the muscle. Mm-hmm. And it may be that you have a natural part of the brain that's larger that produces this, a larger than average lateral prefrontal cortex. But that doesn't mean that you can't work on it, just like you work on building up your body, building up your flexibility, building up your strength. So, you may be able to do activities.
So you can maybe say, I'm going to be more optimistic and my brain will change?
No, it may be. First of all, this is good. Now we need to do research on it because it may be blood flow to this. But it may be that by doing positive things, you become more positive. And this is what you do in cognitive behavioral therapy. In cognitive behavioral therapy, it's beginning to look at the bright side of things versus the dull side. Now, at the extremes, this doesn't work. When you're down in the dumps and you're black about everything, it doesn't work. But I truly believe, from the research that I've read, that you can move on that optimistic scale, and the bang for the buck may be this one part of the brain that really is important. The lateral cortex may be an important part of the brain, and that's what this research shows.
Well, this whole study depresses me. 800-462, I'll get over it. 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Another caller now, Zorba, this time in Danville, Kentucky. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Yeah, well, I'm 24, and I have a question about spider veins and also maybe varicose veins. All my life, I've had a couple of the little purple broken veins on my legs, and every now and then, you know, one might crop up here and there. But in the last 6 months or so, I've noticed them increasing a lot and spreading further down my legs. And also just the veins in general, like in my feet, are more pronounced. And I wondered if there's anything, you know, that I'm doing that might be making this worse, or if I can do anything to kind of slow the tide a little bit, or what causes it exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this is a cosmetic issue. It's not mm-hmm. a cosmetic issue for people who have, you know, large varicose veins, in which case it often becomes a painful issue. And it's inherited. It's an inherited trait. Mm-hmm. Generally, if your mom had it, did your mom have spider veins?
My mom has them very pronounced, and she yeah. also has Raynaud's syndrome, and I didn't know if those two are related.
They're not. Raynaud's syndrome is really an arterial. It's an arterial issue where your hands turn white when your hands are cold. Problem mm-hmm. really in the wintertime. Tom is smiling because we've talked about that before. But spider veins and all the varicose veins are a problem that occur over time. And let me explain where it comes from. You've got veins and you've got valves.
Mm-hmm.
And they're little valves in the veins, and the way the veins bring the blood back to the heart is our muscles are in and out and around the veins, and when our muscles contract, we push blood up the valve, and it's a one-way valve, so we push the blood up, and then the valve is supposed to stop and keeps the blood sort of higher up, and that's how blood gets back to the heart. Well, they break. The valves break over time. For some people, the valves break sooner. For some people, they never break at all. The body can't repair those valves, and so what happens is the veins stay filled with blood, and it moves up gradually. But it now becomes a repository, and they look blue, and they, for some people, they look kind of, they don't like the way they look. And frankly, the only treatment for that is you can either get them stripped, and we do that in severe cases. Mm-hmm. But generally, there are ways to treat it chemically where you have the vein is injected with what's called a sclerosing solution. And this is a solution that goes in the vein that actually destroys the vein, and the other veins take up the slack that's in the body. And that's the treatment. Now, for some people, they want to do this. They don't like the varicose veins. I think cosmetic surgery is fine. It's just like some people choose to wear one piece of clothing versus another. That's the treatment. The only thing that will slow it from happening is to get younger. And I don't think that ain't going to happen, as we said.
I've heard that, you know, like taking a few minutes each day and putting your feet like up. Does that help to help the blood drain out, or is that
not
just kind of wishful
at
thinking?
All. That's wishful thinking. But actually, what actually drains the blood, you can put your feet up and that'll drain the blood. Exercise also drains the blood. Walking upstairs probably will push the blood back into your body just as much. But unfortunately, it's a cosmetic issue.
So, and exercises like running and things where the foot impacts the ground are okay? It's not going to make it worse?
Absolutely. Okay. I have never seen any credible research that says anything makes it better and anything makes it worse, and that's just kind of, you know, it's your body, it's the way it is. You inherited it from your mom or your dad, and I'm sure you inherited other good traits too.
All right, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We appreciate the call. Thank you. And before the break, Zorba, let's take a quick question from the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox. This question comes to us from 16-year-old Eric in Wichita, Kansas, who has an issue that is cramping his style. He writes, "My right wrist weeps and oozes in a sweat-like manner sporadically. This happens at least once a day year-round and can be so intense that I will soak 2 to 3 Terry wrist bands. This has been going on all my life." He's 16, and it seems to be an unsolvable problem. What can I do about my drippy wrist? And before you answer this, this is a 16-year-old kid. My right wrist weeps and oozes in a sweat-like manner sporadically. Most 16-year-old kids My right wrist likes, weeps and oozes kind of sweat, like spread, whatever. This happens kind of at least once a day, like you're around. This is a bright kid.
This is a bright kid who's at, well, he's listening to public radio, which we know increases intelligence.
And all the rest of you 16-year-old kids who talk turn the radio
on. That's right. Please continue with that. Anyway. And it's happened his whole life. All of his seniors that he noticed, so that's exactly it. We have sweat glands in different parts of our body. Some of us sweat on our forehead. Some of us sweat on our cheeks. A lot of us sweat under our arms. You know, that may just be where his sweatbands are. I'm not sure precisely why it happens or why it happens once or twice.
But soaking
once or twice
two to three tearing
wristbands? That's quite a bit. So here's the issue. Because some people have sweaty palms, and that's a big issue because they shake hands, the palm is sweaty, you touch somebody else with their hands, they don't like the feel of that. If it is really problematic and it's happening all the time, there's a super intense antiperspirant spray that you can get called Drysol. It's by a prescription. Works really well. I only recommend it for people where it's a problem every day. For this kid, it's a problem once or twice a year. And my answer is wipe it off. We don't know why. And
this happens at least once or twice. Day.
Oh, once a day.
Year round.
Well, once a day, year round. Then I would try this. I would go talk to your doctor and say, look, I've got a sweaty wrist. It's really sweating here. Put the Drysol on your wrist. Again, it's a generic. It's a super antiperspirant. And see if it works. I'll tell you something that I would try before the Drysol. I just thought about it. I would spray my wrist with an antiperspirant like RightGuard and see, or any one of the other antiperspirants. That's the one I used when I was 16. So I guess that's the one that popped into my mind. And I would spray it on the wrist and see if that did it. Because once again, it's just your sweat glands over there that are working. And try it out, see if it works. And you know what's important? A lot of kids with sweaty wrists listen to public radio. That's been my observation.
That's your research. Let us help uncramp your style by solving your lifestyle questions. Send them to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our recipe is next from the vault. More of your questions, of course, for Zorba, some interesting research, and our medical myth buster later on here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Callers are waiting, but we have a line open for you at 1-800-462-7413. It's recipe time now, Zorba, and as you know, from time to time we like to dig deep back into our archives of recipes to dust off an old favorite in a segment we call Recipes from the Vault. Today's recipe nearly dates back to the beginning of the show. It's a refreshing seafood recipe, perfect for this time of year. So, back by popular demand, here is the recipe for savory cinnamon chilled shrimp.
It sounds good. Where's the popular demand? I mean, were people clamoring for this recipe?
It was popular when it was on years ago.
You mean back in the good old days?
Lots of people requested this recipe.
That is true. And, you know, in those days, we sent recipes through, get this, the United States Post Office.
Yeah.
People would write in, and sometimes we'd have a couple hundred people who would write in for recipe. Yeah. And then we had a volunteer, Gigi, and she would send the recipes out, often with a little note, and it was great. It was very interesting. Yeah.
So that's a good information. When we say popular, we don't mean today people are saying, wait, what about that old recipe, 12, 14 years ago?
That's right.
But when
that's
it was our recipe then, a whole lot of people loved it, and I know they will.
We like to go back to the vault. You know, folks. It's a virtual vault. It's not a real vault. It's a virtual vault. We call it the vault, but there's no safe here, and we don't lock them up.
You give away all our secrets.
Yes, I'm giving away the vault secrets. So here's what we're going to start out with. Start out with two tablespoonfuls of olive oil, extra virgin.
To big tea olive oil.
Mm-hmm. It's the only kind of olive oil I buy anymore. Mm-hmm. It's more expensive, but it is more tasty. 1 tablespoonful of chili powder.
A big tea chili powder.
Now, chili powder is the chili powder, I mean, that you make chili with. And that is a combination. I remember reading the label years ago and finding all the things. I think there are 4 or 5 things in chili powder, and that's what you buy. Buy a good chili powder. Buy it in small containers, because when you open it up, it really has a freshness to it, and it depreciates over time. Mm-hmm. If you're going to buy a big one, that you only want to use that for a big amount of chili. And you want to think about that for all your spices. Dried spices become stale, just like other things in life. Mm-hmm. 1/2 teaspoon of ground cinnamon.
1/2 tea, ground cinnamon.
Once again, small containers. Cinnamon is really aromatic, and if it's there too long, it'll taste okay, and it's okay for toast, but it'll be better if it's fresh. And if you're going to spend the money on the shrimp, spend the money on these seasonings. Mm-hmm. 1/2 teaspoon of nutmeg grated.
1/2 tea, nutmeg grated.
Now, in your house, Tom, do you have a nutmeg grater?
No.
No. Do you have nutmeg?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Now, nutmeg in a container has a certain smell to it. If you grate it, it's incredibly fresh. And they come in nutmegs. They're these little, they're kind of like seeds. They look almost like acorns. Mm-hmm. And all you do is you zest it on a zester or a nutmeg grater. And it's, the whole room sort of smells of nutmeg. And that's what you want. You want 1/2 teaspoon of freshly grated nutmeg. Do not use the pre-powdered one. Mm-hmm. Same with the black pepper. 1/2 teaspoon of black pepper. It should be freshly ground.
1/2 tea, black pepper.
So in other words, when we look at the spices of the recipe, it's going to taste better. Mm-hmm. You will love it, and your guests will love it more if you basically make the spices as fresh as you can.
Okay.
2 pounds of jumbo shrimp, uncooked, peeled, and deveined.
Okay, 2 pounds jumbo shrimp, uncooked, peeled, and deveined.
That's right, deveined. If you care about the vein. I don't care about the vein at all, so I mean, I peel it, but I don't devein it.
Yeah.
And 2 teaspoons of kosher salt.
2 little tea kosher salt. And be sure to get little quantities and keep on buying, because the kosher salt does get worse.
It does not
time.
Get worse. That's the one that doesn't matter at all. You are fooling our public, our listening public. That's what you're doing. Sea salt would be good too. Okay,
okay.
So let's make it. Combine the oil, chili powder, cinnamon, nutmeg, and pepper in a medium bowl. Then add the shrimp and mix to coat and marinate for 10 minutes. You can marinate for longer. When I do this, I marinate it in a plastic bag, Ziploc bag, and you can make it in the morning and have it sit there basically, you know, for all day if you want to. You're going to, of course, have to defrost the shrimp. Then in a large skillet, what you want to do is put a large skillet under high heat, add 1/2 the shrimp in marinade. And the reason is you want to make sure the shrimp cooks the right amount. So you add 1/2 of it and you can look at it and saute until it's just cooked. Now, here's the chef's tip. Mm-hmm. If you go too long, it will taste gummy and it won't taste as good. Shrimp is overcooked by most amateur chefs, including me. I'm an amateur chef, by most of us. And we overcook it. We look at it. We go somewhere else. I may have some coffee. I think about it. And all of a sudden, it's 5 minutes. When I say 2 to 3 minutes, it's 2 to 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. So if you're in doubt, take it out and taste it and look at it. As soon as the shrimp begins to pink up, it's done. It's done. And most times, shrimp is overcooked. The marinade is going to turn your shrimp a little bit brown, and that's what you'll notice. Then, so you add 1/2 the shrimp in marinade, saute for 3 minutes. Add 1/2 the other 1/2 of the shrimp in marinade, saute for 3 minutes. Now, this is the part that Vanessa, one of my lovely kids, loves. Presentation makes a big difference.
Yeah.
So spread it out on the plate. Sprinkle a little kosher salt on top. If you want to, if you've got some parsley, maybe put some parsley around it. Allow it to cool and basically cover it with plastic wrap and refrigerate it. So it's in the refrigerator, in a dish. And when you're ready to kick back with your margarita, you kick back with the margarita, bring out the shrimp, and enjoy life. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of recipe this is. Savory cinnamon chilled shrimp plus life.
It sounds as though it looks good, and it sounds as though it tastes good. And my memory doesn't go back as far as this recipe was originally on, but as I recall, sort of, it does taste
good. It does taste good. And we had lots and lots of people who basically wrote for this. But today, in the modern times, you don't have to write to us, but you can actually find this recipe by going to ZorbaPastor.org. And while you're there, you can sign up for our weekly recipe podcast and search all of your favorite Zorba Pastor On Your Health recipes. That's ZorbaPastor.org.
And if there's a recipe you feel deserves an encore performance, let us know about it. It might just end up being our next recipe from the vault. Simply send the name of the recipe in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Back to the phones we go. 800-462-7413, our toll-free number. 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, listener with us now in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help you?
I have a question related to my lymphedema. So, for those of us who suffer with lymphedema, I wanted to ask Zorba, do you have a great resource for us to use when cooking and or great tips for us to use such as special seasonings that can add flavor and yet reduce the edema?
Yeah. First, Zorba, tell the rest of us who don't know, what is lymphedema?
Well, swelling. It's really swelling. If this is swelling up your ankles and your legs, or your hands swell too?
I have it in the left leg. It's mostly in my ankle and foot, but the entire left leg, and I do wear a support hose for that, one of those very heavy-fibered, thigh-high support hoses.
Oh, so do you wear a Jobst support hose?
Or, yes, I do.
Oh, so you have lymphedema. A Jobst is, they're the best support hose. They're very expensive, as you know.
Yes, they are.
How much do they cost now?
Over $100.
Yeah, they're over $100, but they're fit for you. But that's for people with severe lymphedema. Did you have surgery down there?
No, I didn't. I'm one of those lucky people that falls in that one-third category where it just springs up in life. Voila, here I am. Now deal with it.
You know, treatment for lymphedema is, of course, to wear the stockings. Some people can get by with Ted stockings. That's another brand. And generic Teds that are over-the-counter. Other people need Jobst stockings. Avoiding sodium as much as you can because that leads to it. And, of course, some people have to take a diuretic such as Lasix, known as furosemide. That's the generic name for that. Those are really the treatments. There are no special foods for it. What have you noticed makes it worse? This, by the way, is actually a more common problem than people think. For many people, it's a minor problem, quote, and it's in both ankles and both legs. And for some people, it's due to lack of exercise. And they sit there watching television. They don't move around very much. It's often people with heart disease and lung disease that cause the problem. But it is a common problem.
I have found that the exercise helps a lot, and I try to walk because the more walking I get, the better the circulation. It seems to relieve the edema. Mm-hmm. I'm an elementary school teacher, so I'm on my feet all the time, and that does help in that regard. Just the reason I was really calling, like I said, I do try to eliminate that salt. I have tried to start using more parsley because I've heard that's a natural diuretic, and celery seed in my salads and things because someone told me when I was getting a massage that can help as a natural diuretic. So I was looking for other ideas like that or any book that you might know that would have recipes that would tend to help those of us with this ailment.
Well, first of all, if we look at a natural diuretic, the most common natural diuretic is coffee. I mean, coffee is a diuretic, and coffee is probably a more common diuretic and is probably going to do more. Diuretics are interesting in that before we had pharmaceutical diuretics, we had lots and lots of problems where people died of heart failure. For instance, FDR died ultimately really of heart failure. And there were no diuretics in that time. And a simple diuretic might have kept him going for another 5 or 10 or 15 years. So I mention that because the natural diuretics don't do as much. It's making sure you avoid sodium.
Right.
That's number one. So go to a low-salt cookbook. And there are lots of good low-salt cookbooks at independent bookstores, at Borders, Barnes & Noble. You know, that's what you want to look for. Because those are cookbooks that are going to accent other spices that are useful. So low-salt cooking. As low as you can make it, wearing the support stocking, exercise, very important. When you're watching TV or you're sitting down, putting your legs up because, once again, that angle at the knee basically is going to retard flow back to the heart. And those are kind of the things that you do. Some people actually need to have these compression devices, which are electric, that actually push when the edema gets too severe. You have to wear it at night and pushes the fluid back into the heart. This is from the lymphatic system. Lymphatic system, it's not the arteries, not the veins. The lymphatic system really is responsible for about 3-5% of the flow back into our heart. And when this system goes gaga, which is what happened with your system, that's when we get edema. So good luck.
Thank you, Zorba.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling. And before we hit the break, Zorba, time for another installment of Traveling Tips from Zorba. Today's question comes to us from Abby, who's heading south of the border. Abby writes, I'm going to be vacationing in Mexico next month with my husband. We will be staying at an all-inclusive resort. I've heard of people taking acidophilus or Pepto-Bismol tablets during the week leading up to the departure. I have a sensitive stomach, and I do not want to feel sick at all on vacation. Is there anything I can do to prepare for the trip?
You betcha. First of all, I wouldn't take Pepto-Bismol before the trip. It's not going to do anything at all. Mm-hmm. I think acidophilus and probiotics are excellent to take prior to a trip because then you'll have the good bacteria basically in your stomach. I think it's really important to take, of course, a Cipro with you. Ciprofloxacin is a great pill. It works beautifully for most travelers' diarrhea. And when you're traveling, I always have it on me because sometimes two 500-milligram tablets one time, in other words, a 1-gram dose can knock off your traveler's diarrhea if you get it. But probiotics are good. Things like Activa are probably going to be good to take before the trip. I'd stay away from the Pepto-Bismol. And, of course, when you're there, be sensible. Don't be nuts because you never know what's going on in the kitchen anyway. Be sensible. And that, to me, means having bottled water. And you open the bottle. You open the bottle. Anyone who has seen Slumdog Millionaire who remembers the scene where they re-glued the bottle back, you open the bottle. And let me tell you, I've traveled, and I remember traveling in India, going to a really fancy restaurant. This was last year, and the bottled water came there, and I opened the bottle, and I know what it feels like. I mean, you know, there's a little crack.
Sure.
And I opened it, and it didn't crack right. And I handed it to my waiter, and I said, I want a different bottle. I think this didn't crack right. He didn't bat an eye and brought it back. And I thought, Slumdog Millionaire. That's what that was telling us. I learned something from that movie.
Make sure you add Zorba to your itinerary. If you've got a question for our next edition of Traveling Tips from Zorba, just send your question in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have some more interesting research to talk over in just a moment. More of your calls, of course, and our medical MythBuster here on Zorba Pasture on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, this has been in the news. A diabetes drug linked to higher heart risk.
Right. Well, we're looking at the diabetes drug Avandia. And Avandia, which is under the generic name rosiglitazone, is in one class of drugs. There are two drugs sort of comparable, Avandia and Actos. Actos is the other drug, which, by the way, will be generic within about a year or so. Expensive drugs, they respectively lower blood sugar. Mm-hmm. And the goal for diabetes is to try to get blood sugar under control. Why? Because we want fewer heart attacks and fewer strokes and less kidney disease. So if a drug does that, if it lowers blood sugar and is better for your heart and better for your kidney and better for your brain, it's good. Well, Avandia appeared to be different than the other drug that was in this class, in this group, in this class, on the market. And a couple of years ago, Cleveland Clinic came out with a study that showed that it looked like people had more heart attacks and had more heart failure. These drugs can also cause heart failure. So why use them? Well, the sales dropped in half. Still a lot of sales. I think about $1 billion a year, not a small amount. But they dropped in half in the sales in half, and the sales went to the other drug, Actos. Well, lo and behold now, the feds have come out with a different study that they're looking at. There are two studies, one in the Archives of Internal Medicine, one in JAMA, that show, that once again reinforce the fact that, yes, this drug may be bad for us.
That's two studies.
Well, the two studies, a big studies. Now, the problem is this. The FDA is right to look at this and say, should this drug be taken off the market? That's the question. And they should not take it off willy-nilly, because there are a lot of studies that show one thing. We know this all the time. And then the studies show another thing.
Sure.
And I've got a definite idea on this. First of all, Actos, the other drug in this class, really has not been shown to have the side effects. I really believe that people should go on Actos. I think they should be taken off of Andia, put on Actos, because Actos has not been proven to have the same side effects. Mm-hmm. So I think that's safer. And I basically switched all my patients onto that.
Why not say we should take this off the market?
Well, I think you need a special panel, and that's what the FDA is actually going to do. They're going to convene a panel to try to answer this question, because even though you have a couple of studies, if you start taking drugs off the market in this fashion, you're going to take off drugs that may really have potential effects. But here's what we need to do, and this is the suggestion. The people on the panel that ultimately make the decision should not be the experts who made the decision to put the drug on the market. And the reason is they may be biased.
Sure.
You know, we approved it and we think it's good. And so the makeup of the panel is critical. The makeup of the panel is very important. And I think the FDA should decide this. But in the meantime, if you're on Avandia, talk to your doctor and consider going to Actos. I think it's the thing to do.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. Back to the phones now, and a listener with us in Dubuque, Iowa. Hi.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Zorba. Thanks for taking my call.
We appreciate it. How can we help?
Hey, I was wanting to get Zorba's opinion on whether or not I should reinstitute treatment with a statin.
So what's your situation?
Well, I have had a history of both cervical spine and lumbar spine surgeries, and kind of developed a chronic pain and fatigue condition or syndrome. And we thought maybe it was related to statin therapy that I'd been on for probably about 10 years. And off treatment, I have a total cholesterol around 231, an LDL of 169, an HDL of 34, and triglycerides of 142. If I go on a statin, it knocks everything down that should go down except the HDL. I have a problem with that. It tends to run low or below 40.
Mm-hmm. So now, should you be on a statin? That's the first question. Heart disease in your family?
Not really, no.
Okay, I mean premature heart attacks.
Yeah,
Dad dying or having a heart attack in their 50s, something like that.
No, father lived to 78, mother to 86.
How's your blood pressure?
Blood pressure is good.
Good. On blood pressure medicines or not?
No.
You probably don't need to be on a statin. I'll tell you what you do. You Google Framingham Risk Study, 10-year risk study. That's what you do. I can't do it on the air because I don't have a computer with me. You Google it. And what you do is you put in your age, whether you're a smoker, what your blood pressure is. We'll put a link on our website, Zorba. Pastor.org. We'll make it easy for you. Go to that website, put the numbers in, and then you put the numbers in with your cholesterol as it is, as one number. Your total cholesterol and your HDL is what you have to put in that little computer. It'll tell you what your 10-year risk is for having a heart attack and stroke. Really neat. Write that on a little sheet of paper, and then now go back into that little dialogue box, and now put your cholesterol down to 180, okay? Let's say it goes down to 200 or 180 on there, and then look at what your risk is. Offhand, your risk is probably reduced by only 1% to 2%. I'm not sure because I don't have a little computer. 1% to 2% is negligible. It's when it goes down really 5% or 10% it has a meaning. So what happens is, even though you've got an elevated LDL or 160, it doesn't mean you need treatment, because you may have lower risk factors from other things, such as really super blood pressure. So that's the first thing. A, do you need the statin? The Framingham Risk Score will tell you whether or not they need statin, and that follows the National Cholesterol Education people. So that's critical. You probably don't need it, but go and do the numbers yourself. I don't have it in front of me. Number two, you were off the statin. Did it make any difference?
No, not really.
So if you didn't feel better, the statin probably didn't do it. I don't believe statins cause chronic fatigue. I think chronic fatigue is a separate issue. I don't think there's any evidence that cause chronic fatigue. Popular drugs are blamed for lots and lots of things. Now, statins do cause muscle aches in people. There's no doubt about that. That's proven. And some people don't like the way they feel on any drug. They take a drug and they go, I just don't feel good. And the way to see if the drug is the problem is take it, stop it for maybe 2 or 3 weeks, take it again for a few weeks, stop it. In other words, test yourself a few times and see how you feel. If you don't feel good on the statin, don't go on it. But it may not be a class effect. It may be an individual effect. Another statin may work. But for you, the first step is to go to the Framingham Wrist Store at our website, zorbapastor.org. See if you need it. My off-the-ball thing, because I use this 3 to 5 times a day with patients, is you probably never need it to be on a statin in the first place.
Hey, I appreciate it, Zorba.
Take care and good luck to you.
Thanks.
Now, this is new information for me, Zorba. I was under the impression that the lower the cholesterol, the healthier you are, the less risk you have.
Well, the lower the cholesterol is naturally, the less risk you have. No doubt about that.
With taking a statin, the lower you can get it, the better off you are.
Absolutely depends on everything that goes on. Your age, what your HDL and good cholesterol is, whether or not you're a smoker, and what your blood pressure is. And we now have very good data, and then the doctor then takes that clinical scenario and helps make a decision for the patient. But a lot of people are on statins when they shouldn't be on them. And a lot of people stop taking statins when they should take them. And that's why you go to a reliable doctor.
Well, time once again now, Zorba, for our medical myth buster. We have a listener myth today from Jim in Millville, New Jersey. Jim is curious about the health benefits of green tea. He writes, I recently read that adding milk to green tea greatly reduces the health benefits of that drink. Since I can hardly stand the taste of green tea without milk, I've been gulping the stuff down as fast as I possibly can. Is this milk business a myth?
Yes. The milk business is a myth. When you add things to green tea, it doesn't really change it at all. And green tea has antioxidants. Green tea may be helpful for Alzheimer's disease. Green tea appears also to possibly lower blood pressure. There was a study on green tea that showed that it really had some blood pressure lowering properties. It's a very interesting drink. As coffee, and I'm a coffee drinker more than a tea drinker, these drinks like coffee and tea are really salubrious. They really are things that are salutatory and really improve our health. I think green tea is awesome. I think if you don't like it, adding milk is great. It is a myth that the milk reduces the effectiveness of green tea. If that's what makes you enjoy it, hey, that's what life is about. You want to be able to have an enjoyable drink versus gulping it down like cod liver oil.
With or without milk, we'll still take your myth. Just send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our number is 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, a listener joins in Goshen, Alabama. Hello.
Hi, I appreciate you guys taking my call today.
Sure, we appreciate the call. How can we help?
I have tentatively been diagnosed with having IBS. It started, I'd say, when I was about 15, and what happened was had a really bad stomach virus and spent a lot of time in the bathroom. And while I was in there, I had nothing else to do. So I actually started masturbating at that time. And ever since then, I've had the stomach problems. And it seems like after masturbating, it gets really, really bad like the next couple of days. And if I don't do it for a few days, you know, my stomach seems to be pretty fine.
Hmm. Okay, so getting back, do you find this whenever you orgasm, or is it just with masturbation?
Well, mainly orgasm.
Uh-huh. Do you get a headache when you orgasm?
I do not, no, sir.
Okay, because what happens is during the orgasmic function, you can get there a variety of things that occur hormonally and neurologically during orgasm, and there can be a post-orgasmic headache that can be very, very bothersome, like an ice cream headache that bother people, and it can be the same thing which can affect irritable bowel syndrome.
Now, have you've seen this connection, Zorba?
Well, there's a connection between orgasm and lots of things that occur neurologically. So the post-orgasmic headache is well-defined in the neurological literature. And when you look at IBS, IBS is definitely under a form of neurological control. Why? Stress causes irritable bowel syndrome. Anxiety causes irritable bowel syndrome. So we know that there's a mental component, some of which is conscious and some of which is subconscious. So if you're having sex, is it related to that at all?
actually, when I have sex and have an orgasm, it really doesn't bother me the next day.
Oh, it doesn't bother you then. Well, we know one of the answers is to have sex every day, and then you won't be bothered by your irritable bowel syndrome. I'll put that on a prescription. I'll send it to you. That's what I would recommend. Daily sex for IBS.
That's sometimes easier said than done.
In fact, sometimes easier said than done. You know what? You have given my title to my new book, Cure IBS with Daily Sex. It's no doubt, there's no doubt about that. But as Tom said, because sometimes having daily sex can be, it's like exercise. It's hard to fit in. What I would recommend is looking at things that actually work that also work for headaches. So I'd look at a daily Aleve tablet, an anti-inflammatory tablet, such as one Aleve tablet in the evening or in the morning, and I go to up to four a day, two Aleve tablets twice a day. That's naproxen, generic naproxen. I would try that to see if that works. If that doesn't work, I would look towards there are a series of drugs that basically help reduce the spasm in the stomach. None of them work perfectly, but they work for some people. A drug called Bentyl, B-E-N-T-Y-L, that's B-E-N-T-Y-L. It comes in a generic, and that may work. And then another one called Levsin, L-E-V, as in Victor, S-I-N, Levsin. This goes under the tongue, and sometimes these work for IBS. And and if that doesn't work, as I said before, daily sex, it's the cure.
Yeah. Well, that sounds perfect.
Thanks so much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Before the clock runs out on this hour, Zorba, it's my job to let you know that you've been bitten once again by the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police. Several of our deputies took issue with you during our recent chat about mosquitoes. Deputy Sheila, out of our Missouri Bureau, summarizes your multiple citations. She writes, "Mosquitoes don't hone in. They home in on our succulent arms and legs. Hone means to sharpen, as on a whetstone. And kids don't get bit by mosquitoes. They get bitten." Well, I still enjoy your program and your excellent advice.
You know, you would think that English was my second language. The other question is, all of these grammar police, I mean, they remind me of Miss Schutte and Miss Kelly, who in the Chicago public schools were always telling us that we spoke wrong. You know, we didn't speak right. So, yes, I'm amazed. Thank you so much. My face is turning red again. Home in, hone in. You know, mosquitoes bite you. What can I do?
But you get bitten.
That's right.
If you'd like to home in on another one of Zorba's errors to help him hone his skills with the English language, send your citation to the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Adam Friedrich and Brad Kohlberg, better known by their street names of Hammer and Spike, are the two dragons in charge of this hour. Adam Friedrich is our executive producer. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0702Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.